Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. For international listeners, the podcast will be held mostly in English. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. My guest today is Marina Faust, a multidisciplinary artist and photographer based in Vienna. Hi, Marina. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Daniela. Hi.
Marina, when I visited you recently in Vienna, you told me that you're living and working actually in the apartment you grew up with your parents, so which is a great start because I wanted to ask you something about your background and how you came to photography. What was your inspiration then and how that led to the extended world of art?
That's a big loop.
Well, just start at the beginning. That's the easiest.
Yes, yes. Well, I was born in Vienna, which you could still call the after-war Vienna. I was born 1950, but everything was still very present. And actually, I remember until to my very early childhood that it was an incredibly energetic and creative atmosphere and situation in Vienna, parallel to a very heavy and dark part, which was the past, which was present. The very close border to the Soviet Union, the Eastern Bloc, and it was a very, very special atmosphere. And I remember very early, my mother had this open house because we had this very nice apartment in the center of Vienna, which led to the possibility to have people coming over with the terraces. And my mother liked to receive. So there was this kind of salon, you could call it salon. We didn't call it at the time like this, but today people would say we had a salon, and many artists, actors, writers, philosophers passed through this apartment in which I live today.
So your parents were interested in art and culture?
Yes, my father was a book collector and very intellectual man who was actually a testimony to the whole 20th century. He was born in Vienna, 1912, and died 2005. And my mother was, very, very interesting, witty, beautiful, inspired woman. And she was the one, my father was more the intellectual who had friends like writers and philosophers. And my mother brought actually in the artists.
Yes.
Yeah, painters and sculptures. But it was mixed up. The categories were much more fluid at the time than today. And there were cabaretists, you know, and songwriters, and
Everybody creative would meet up.
Yes.
Everybody creative. And you were a little girl, and because it was your surroundings, you took it like it was just the way it is. Or were you aware that this is something special?
No, not at all. It was just what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite shy. I was a rebel.
A shy rebel,
yes. My school time was a total disaster. I was thrown out of 5 or 6 schools, actually.
Oh,
and,
yeah, like me.
And hello.
Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Right. But at the same time, I was quite shy. And these personalities, who were all very strong personalities and very loud people who had very important things to say, frightened me a little bit. So I was fascinated. I only wanted to be with adults at that time, you know. Oh. I wasn't interested in kids at all. I was just wanted to be there, not go to bed and listen to what was going on. So I had great fun, but in a very retracted way. And this is interesting because this was also my position at the beginning of my photography, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have this camera and you are distant. You have a kind of protection.
You are the witness. You are the witness.
Yes, yeah.
Mm. Why photography then? Because you could be behind the camera as a kind of protection?
Not really. That's the things that you understand later on. I didn't really have, I was really a lot around artists. Then I was around artists of my generation later on in Vienna. You know, there was this kind of life going on where we were a lot in cafes and discussing and sitting around. And I was used to this. It sounds a little frivolous. It's not frivolous at all, but it was this Dolce Vita time because people were so happy to live and to have this war behind them. And so I think this is justified also in that way. And so I continued this kind of life, you know, even though my father was working, he was at the head of an organization for political refugees from the Eastern countries. So it was a very engaged, serious life parallel to that. But the mood was really not very big into action, not very much into action. And I didn't have any whatsoever ambition.
Because it was just a newfound freedom. So you just enjoyed being young and free.
Yeah, probably. It was also that free time. You could snap with your fingers and you had a job, you know. Mm. Everything was easy. I mean, there were problems around, but it was, in a certain sense, it was quite easy. Easy, but then parallel to that, life was very heavy. It was a very, very strange combination because in Vienna, also among the artists group, there was a lot of depression and suicide, and it was a dark spot at the same time. But the art scene was always good. And even though Vienna has this very cliche image, you know, of being so historical, there was always a very, very progressive mood in all kinds of fields, like in art, in architecture, you know, in music. And it's still very good, and it's still the case. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, a whole movement came from Vienna.
Many.
Like performance art and,
yes,
yeah, also blood.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably the heavy part of it. A lot of male artists kind of like did some pretty heavy stuff, but it was important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. Well, it was very, I can say that in the 70s, the early 70s, you know, when I began to work as a photographer. I began very early to work as a photographer, but it was a pure coincidence of things. Mm-hmm. And I began to work as a reporter immediately after my baccalaureate, my matura, you know, when I finished school. And I was working, but it was a coincidence, as I said.
When you started, how photography was the thing you decided for? And in the beginning, also as like a reporter, street photographer?
Actually, my first photo, I must say, to go back very shortly, was in 1955 in Cannes. I was 5 years old, and I took my mother's Rolleiflex and wanted to make this beautiful photo of my mother. I found her so beautiful, and I took a photo of her. And actually, the photo, I felt it as a failure, as a total failure, and I was very frustrated because it showed her not like I wanted to see her, but how she really was, actually. She was very, she had problems, and you could see that she was like, you know, in a kind of mood where she was contracted and not at all this blooming, beautiful woman. That was my first photo.
I have to go into this. So you had the feeling that the photograph showed more the truth of your mom, like what you saw, or was it more like it just showed the surface and you saw something beyond the surface?
No, it showed my mother as she really was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's a miracle, but you were still disappointed.
Yeah, it was. It escaped me somehow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was disappointed because she showed the difficulty, you know, and the tension. And I wanted to show her beautiful, like with her sunglasses and her foulard on her head and driving her car. And, you know, it was all these things.
Like a real lady.
Yeah. So this was my one single photograph. Then I had a sudden wish to have a photograph taken of me lying on the floor, killed by an arrow. This was very strange.
Like a performance.
Yes. Very weird thing that I was 15 or 14 years old, or 15 or 16 maybe. And I had a very precise idea of the whole setup and everything. So this was a photo taken of me. These were the two things that happened photographically in my life. And then I began to work as a photographer immediately for a newspaper. I mean, my mother had cameras, but she was not very active. My father had a talent for many things, but also for photography. And this was somehow there, but it was not very present. And it was really by the coincidence, because my parents found I should do something with my life after I had finished school. So there was this announcement in one of the newspapers that they were looking for a photographer. A friend of my father actually told me that. And I went there and I got a job for a few months. I didn't know anything about anything.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Those lucky days where that was still possible.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Great. So you just started like from zero.
Yeah. Yes. I had a little bit of notion because I had taken pictures and I had tried out a few things in the lab of a friend, you know, but when they asked me what kind of lens I was using, I was describing the lens in its form and in size. I didn't even know what to say. So, yeah. Anyways, but then I began. What was interesting is I don't consider myself at that time an original or inspired photographer at all or talented. But I began to work to take photos for an artist in Vienna who made performances, Walter Pichler. And I did that quite well. And very slowly, I developed a wish to do things for myself. And when I was 24, I had heard from somebody who was at the Atlantic coast in France that there were these bunkers from the war that were on the dunes, you know, sitting on the dunes, and that they could not destroy them because they were too much dynamite to destroy them. They would destroy everything around. So they kept them.
Yeah, they were too sturdy, too perfectly built, too hard to destroy them. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so these bunkers were like sliding down the dunes, disappearing in the sea, reappearing when the sea retracted, you know. And I found this in a situation that really like inspiring and also had a certain poetry to it, you know. And so I made a trip. And I photographed these bunkers. And that was my first personal work, let's say.
But it was just because you were interested. It was not, you didn't have a plan what to do with it then.
No, not at all. It was just a project for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then later, I was a lot in Italy and I showed it to somebody who had a magazine. And this led actually to a small publication, but it led to another magazine. And it led to the fact that I began to photograph interiors to earn my life, actually. For the basic earning, I did do interior photography then for 35 years, if not more.
Wow, that's a long career as an interior photographer.
Yeah, yes. And at the beginning, I was desperate because it didn't so much not fit into my life and my aesthetics and everything. But I just did it and I continued it and I got better in it. And at the end, I really had actually joy with it because I found myself in this incredible, very heavy loaded interior decoration houses and apartments. And I needed to take photos that I liked and to have a Polaroid and looking at it and saying to myself, well, that's really beautiful.
Oh, so in the beginning, it were jobs. You had like a job description, how you had to photograph that. But through those 35 years, you developed your own aesthetics and it kind of like you made it your own?
No, I didn't have a description of what I should do.
Oh, you could do it like the way you wanted from the beginning.
Well, there were certain rules. There were certain rules, especially for American Architectural Digest magazine. There were certain rules, but I was quite free to choose what I wanted to show. So I learned a lot about space and installing because you had to make this kind of still lifes or these corners of space. I understood much later, you know, that I learned a lot during this period about many things. And I just needed to bring them into a certain kind of light in many senses that I could accept. So it was quite an interesting school. But I began very early. This was just a parallel activity. And parallelly to that, I did my projects and I showed them also. I mean, it was a kind of a parallel activity because I had my first photography shows in Paris at Galerie Agathe Gaillard in 1982 and 1986. There's one thing I would like to say, which is very important because I was talking also about my early life in Vienna, that I grew up with all these artists. What was really my basic formation and inspiration was always painting more than photography. And when I lived in Italy later on, also in the 70s, I began to live in Italy, going back and forth between Italy and Paris. I had a second kind of education after my Vienna time, which was looking at Italian Renaissance painting. And this was a very big inspiration. And it was my main inspiration for my first black and white photo shows at Galleria Gagliarek.
But you decided not to become a painter yourself?
No, never. I never even crossed my mind.
It was always photography for you?
Yeah, but somehow it came to me.
I can understand that very well, you know. I come from the same point. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about that, right, yeah.
No, I can understand that. So you were then in Italy and you looked at the Renaissance paintings and they inspired you for your own work in photography.
Yes, totally. Italy in general, that time, every church, every chapel has a masterpiece on the wall. And it was just really a very, very, how do you say, forming time for me, you know. I learned a lot. I learned also to look at art in a different way, you know. And I worked for myself and I did interior photography for my basic income.
That means you are self-made in what you do.
Yes.
You're completely self-made. And
yeah, 100%
self-made. And you also obviously were quite fearless because you just changed countries, you changed the way you work, you changed your interests. So how does it come that you went from Vienna to Paris to Italy and so forth?
Yeah, it was mostly for personal reasons.
For love.
Yes, yeah. My ex-husband, who is also an artist, was in Paris at the time. So I went there because he was there. Then I met somebody. Many years later, we separated with my husband, who is still a good friend, actually. But I met somebody who lived in Italy at that time. And so I ended up in Italy, between Paris and Italy. Mm-hmm. Then I was in Italy for about 8-10 years in the northern Tuscany. And then I had a moment where I must have been, I don't know how old I was, 84, I was 35 years or so. I thought I'd have to go because in Italy I was in a small town. It was really a fantastic life, as I said, very formative. But I thought I have to go. I was already in Paris often and I had my first show with Agathe Gaillard. And then I thought, well, that's where I can connect. That's the city where I want to be. Where can I be in Europe? There's Paris, London, the rest. I mean, Vienna was out of question. I really needed to leave Vienna because it was a very male-dominating, very tough situation for many reasons, also my personal life. I needed to go. So there was Paris, then and then Italy, and then where to go after Italy. So I thought Paris is the place where I should be. I have a gallery who showed my work. I have, you know, I had a few connections. So then I found my studio in Paris, which was a miracle. I found a very nice place that I left just a few months ago, definitely, because we had to leave the building altogether when we were a group of people. And then I began to live in Paris for about nearly 40 years. And that was also a very, very important formation I had in approaching the thinking, the language, this kind of very inspired way of the logic of language that leads to this very inspired thinking in France. It was something that was very important for me and I learned a lot actually there.
Also in France, there's a great appreciation for photography. Photography is something really important.
Yes.
There. And yes, they have the photo festival in Arles. Also, yes, even more, there's a great deep respect for photography. So I think at that time, it was probably the perfect place for you.
Yes. And Agathe Gaillard was this very visionary. You know, she was the first gallery for photography. I mean, today this sounds really incredibly historical, but she was the first one, you know, and I was in very good company with Ralph Gibson and Larry Clark and Kertész, Hervé Guibert, who wrote also a little text about me in Le Monde at the time about my show. So this was quite an incredible situation.
So how did you meet her? Just by being in Paris and just like meeting all the people and being part of the scene there?
No. I walked in.
Oh, you walked in. That's a bold move.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And that was it. She liked me and she showed me. She was quite incredible.
That rarely works. I mean, that's really a big exception, actually.
No, but this is basically never works.
Yes.
But with me, it worked. Actually, I must say that all the rules, you have really to find your own rules in life, and especially as an artist, because all the things I always tried to do that others did that were very successful, others never worked for me. And I really understood that you have to find your own way. Mm. You know, that's the only way is to find your own way.
That's probably true for everybody, really.
Yeah, yeah.
For some people, it works going with the rules. But I think as an artist, it never can really work. You have to always find your own path. Always.
Right. Yeah.
I guess. So that was your first show. And was it well received?
Yes, very well received. Very well received. And we had a lot of publications, a lot of articles. Today, I would be so happy. At the time, it was okay, but I wasn't especially proud about it or felt successful, not at all. It was just kind of happening and it was really fine. And I moved on and I went on. And as I said before, I wasn't extremely ambitious. I did not really try to plunge into the photography world or the art world at all. I was quite in my life, but always working on my projects. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that today still, you know, in a certain sense. I want to have my peace and just work. And if I can have enough to continue to live comfortably and work, I'm happy.
Oh, but that's a good way to live, because otherwise there will be always somebody more successful, more important.
Of course, of course.
You know, having more money, all of that. And if you compare yourself all the time, you never appreciate what you have.
Yes.
And that you're probably at a really good place.
Yes.
And all this comparing to each other, that is very toxic, I think.
It's incredibly toxic. Not that I didn't have these kind of thoughts or feelings in my life, of course. I mean, you have a lot of frustration, you know, as an artist. This is like incontournable. You cannot get around that. But I got to that point where I feel in peace with this, with my situation, whatever it is, whatever it was and whatever it can become, because I feel always under construction. But I find this, as you said, what is very pushed by social media today, this comparing and seeing all the time, also seeing fragments, and you think that's the life you see. You only see a fragment of things and you have no idea what is really behind it. It's very toxic, as you said. It's really terrible.
I mean, it is interesting because belonging to a generation where you were really growing up, living, developing everything in the analog world, also with photography, because photography, photos or images are so much part of this new social media world. And you also have an Instagram account, Marina.
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm totally into it. And I look much too much at Instagram.
You know?
That's the contradiction, of life. Actually, I'm also critical because you try always to get away from Instagram. I mean, I use it and it's actually an incredible tool, you know, and I'm very happy to have it. But at the same time, you fight against it because you look too much at it and it's this invasion of images today. I don't think it brings anything. It takes more than it brings, really, you know.
You know, you have the choice because you can discriminate, because you still can make a difference between, well, let's say the physical world and the digital virtual world. When for younger people who grew up in that world, for many of them, it's more real than the physical world.
Yeah.
They don't really have the choice. You know, you have the choice. You can choose.
Yeah, that's totally true. Like I use also the digital tools, but I'm not submitted to the aesthetic and structural qualities of it. I just use it. I subvert it, you know, I have fun with that, you know, to even subvert it, to not do what you should do exactly, but I do it in a different way. So there's the rebellion again in a certain kind of childish rebellion again in a certain sense. But yes, I had this, I went from analog to digital at a certain point, also quite early, because I must have or I have a certain ability to adjust to these things and to understand them quickly. But I was also annoyed by certain things, like, for example, I was totally annoyed. I passed so many years and nights in my lab to make the photo prints myself, you know?
It's so draining sometimes because I know that I spend hours and hours in the lab and I much prefer to use Photoshop and give it to somebody to print it out.
Well, that's okay.
I mean, I don't do that anymore, you know? You know.
Yes, I know. Of course. I mean, I could only do black and white anyways and not color, you know. But what annoyed me totally is that there was a movement from analog to digital that they imitated this beautiful Barit paper, which was really incredible paper. And today with my vintage prints of that time, I look at that paper and it moved a little bit. You know, it has a kind of volume. Mm-hmm. It's really very beautiful. I frame it like that. That they went to this imitation of Barit paper, like plastic, you know, it looked like this fake. It was a fake. It was not Barit anymore. It was a fake. And I was really annoyed by that. And I didn't like to use it. It didn't please mm-hmm. me. And so that's how I got to my silk paper prints, because I developed this technology to print on semi-transparent wrapping, basically, or protecting silk paper. And I got to that because I just had a paper in my studio in Paris. You know, I experimented a lot. So I took a piece of paper. I said, okay, let's try that. Maybe this is at least real paper. It's silk paper, you know, and it worked.
Yes, and it's really your singular invention, so to say, to do it that way. That's kind of like something very unique. And also, I remember the first works I saw by you a couple of years ago in an exhibition Wilhelm Schürmann curated at my gallery.
Yes.
Those were works printed on silk paper, and those were the very special, very, very beautiful works of photographs you realized for Martin Margiela.
Yes.
That is such an interesting body of work, which is, in my eyes, absolutely art, but it touches on the fashion world. It touches on photography. It's this silk paper. It has its own volume and material, you know, because that's the misunderstanding, that photography is just an image. It is also a paper. It's material. It's a thing.
Yeah, right. Totally. Well, this whole... how to say, this whole evolution with photography was always linked to art in a certain mm-hmm. sense. And I was always interested in art, and I was not specifically interested in fashion. I always liked to dress in my way, and I liked clothes. There's also a dandy kind of tradition in Vienna, actually. And all the things I do, I want just to say that until today, even if it is remotely, but like linked in a certain sense to still to photography. And when I heard in the late 80s that a fashion designer in Paris had shown his clothes in a kind of total underground performance in the outskirts of Paris on a parking slot, and the people who were living in the surrounding were part of the show at the end. And so I heard that, and it reminded me totally my time in Vienna of this underground, you know, performance scene and experimental film scene also in which I grew up. It was really my culture somehow. So I got very interested in that. I said, wow, this was totally revolutionary at the time. Today, everybody does it. At the time, nobody did. Yeah. And this is the same thing. It's the same thing. I heard about this.
And you just went to him and said, hey, I think it's great what you're doing?
I went to the showroom and I walked in. And I talked to the press attaché, and the press lady, Else Skalfol, was her name, was very nice. And I saw the clothes that I had not seen. So I was totally impressed and flabbergasted by what I saw. It was silhouettes and constructions that were totally contemporary, visionary, and at the same time, very much based on historical costumes. And it was this incredible, strange mix of things, and also playful. You could, you know, you could wear a sweater in 5, 4, 2, 3, 1 pieces if you want, 1 piece, 2 pieces, 3 pieces. It was really fantastic. So I loved it. And then the press attaché saw my enthusiasm and knew I was a photographer. So she said to me, why don't you come to the next show and take photos, you know?
I really like this, that people are reacting on enthusiasm, on inspiration. You know, they don't judge you, you know, who are you, where do you come from, how well are you connected. They really just they just feel your energy. That's so cool.
Yeah, well, it's a few aliens in this world maybe. who I had the luck to meet.
Yes, but they are I mean, these people are doing something meaningful, you know.
So
you started photographing for Margiela.
I went to the showroom for the next show. That was just a drink among people, and the models merged with the mm-hmm. public, which was also great. And I photographed, and then I brought the Barit prints that I had printed in my lab to the showroom, back to Else. And she saw that. And when she saw my photos, she said, oh, Martin has to see mm-hmm. that. She called him and he came from his office to look at my images and he loved them immediately. So it was really an encounter. I was interested in Magella because he functioned so artistically and he was interested in my photography because I came from reportage photography and was not a fashion photographer, that I never was. On that basis really began our collaboration and our friendship that lasts until today, actually.
And how long did you do that for him?
Through the whole time of his career from that moment on. It was from 1990 until 2008.
Wow, that's a lifetime.
Yes. Well, it's 20 years, nearly 20 years. At the very beginning, I missed a few shows because I didn't know him. And in between, there were one or two shows I wasn't in Paris, I couldn't do. But it was very regular. And also, I was already working in my studio. I began to do video works at that time. For 10 years, I made a lot of video works and I had also photographic projects that I realized at the time I began to show a little bit the video works. It was fantastic because it really took me out of this, in your studio, you can turn in a circle, you know, you're always alone.
Yes.
And it brought me into this spectacular show and before a show in the fashion world. Also in the showroom, sometimes we had working sessions, you know, and I loved his clothes and I like clothes, as I said, very much. So it was also this great kick because I could photograph what I like. I could also wear it partly. And we worked also a little bit in exchange for a while. It was really this joy, you know, in the middle of a life that was fine, but it was like a sudden ecstatic moment. Yeah.
I have the feeling that you, despite, yes, as an artist, sometimes one is frustrated and it's not so easy, but you just did for the last decades and up till now, just what you like, what you do, what you want, what brings you joy.
Yes, there was never another way. That was always my way to do things. I experimented always a lot, you know. There are these artists who very early know exactly what they want and they go for it very straightforward. Mm-hmm. And I was the one, the late bloomer, who needed a lot of experimentation and life experience and learning through life, through work also. And that's how very slowly I developed my techniques. I developed my things from one to the other. Where I am today, I would never have imagined ever to get there.
So it was always your intrinsic motivation. It was never like, oh, what will they think? Or I do it for that show. Or how do they perceive me? It was always coming from inside of yourself.
Yes, it did. But it doesn't mean that I didn't think sometimes, what will they think of it? You know, mostly when you're younger and you're not so sure of yourself, you have this like shyness because you have really to go for it. You show yourself, you know, what you are. And it took me some time to understand that also in a certain sense, what I have is also part of everybody else. And the precious thing I have is maybe a certain way to communicate also with the other, with the viewer, with the public. If it works and there's something they can connect to, it creates this fantastic link in a certain sense to the outer world.
And working with photography in that way, if you're not working in the studio, but if you're working outside, if you're not alone, I mean, if other people or things are on the photo, you're never alone. That's the great thing. Photography, although on one hand, like very early in our talk, we talked about that it is a kind of protection and you are the witness. But on the other hand, it can connect you deeply with the world.
Well, it connected me to the world in a certain sense, but not to the people I photographed. I wouldn't say that. I find it connected me to the world in a certain way. But it also isolates you from the world. If you do the reportage mm-hmm. photography I did, you know, as you say, I mean, it's a protection, but it's also a shield and it's a separation. And I think when I began to be myself in the photographs, because I had this discipline of self-portrait since a very long time. I did the miniature photos in the 80s where I looked back at me. I was holding the camera in one hand, looking through it and doing gestures with my other hand, everyday gestures. banalities, what makes our life like a day, you know? And I photographed that. And so the way to photograph towards myself, and then in the videos, I'm always present. You don't recognize me because I'm just a, it's more like a surface of projection, but I have these kind of things where you don't see me, kind of accessories. But the way to be in my photographs and in my videos connected me more to the world, I would say. Yeah, connected me more to the world. And then when I moved from the video to objects, they were also linked to photography, like the traveling chairs, you know, they were first for traveling shots, and then I used them in exhibition spaces. And what I do today, also the collage works that are still photographs, but nobody recognizes it really as a photograph. But these things that come more intimately from myself, very deeply, connect me more to the outer world than when I was witnessing. I'm not sure about this witnessing. Of course it's witnessing, but it's like how I looked before at the world as a photographer.
I think it's a subjective thing how everybody does that. I probably was more talking about how I used to photograph.
Yes.
You know, so it's definitely different with you.
It's interesting to hear that, how the perceptions are so different, you know.
That's why it can be so individual, you know. The machine is just the tool. The rest is in the eye of the beholder, of the photographer.
Yeah. And in the heart.
And in the heart. That's true.
And in
that's
the heart.
That's true. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And then you started those collage works you do now. Because I was thinking about them. Did this also develop because you started working with a special kind of paper which has a special material touch? And then you started cutting up things more and more? How did you come about to the collage things where the basis is still photography, but as you said, it's not so obvious as it was before?
Actually, I used these semi-transparent silk papers also for portraits. I had a whole long period where I made portraits because when I was back in Vienna, I had this very nice light, northern light in my studio here. And somehow it was a very good situation for taking portraits. I mean, that's not the only reason. Also linked actually to portraits, it made me think of the portraits in the Münzkabinett in the Kunsthistorische Museum in Vienna, where I have all these small portraits and mostly profiles, because I did also quite many profiles when I did the portrait that were preparative paintings for the coins, you know. So I made these portraits and I printed them also on this silk paper. So I used the silk paper really instead of this photo paper. I didn't want to use this new photo paper, as I explained before. So that became my material, really. I also printed some interiors on this silk paper. I mean, things work very nicely on that. But the collage work really came again through a situation of life. I was invited for a brunch at a friend's house and they had two kids and the daughter, Anna, she was 3.5 years old. And she showed me this image of a children's game that is a kind of a paper block. And you have these plain faces of women with no eyes and no mouth, nothing, or just hairdos, different skin colors, different hair colors and hairdos. And you have sticker pads and you put the sticker pads on the face. And then you create this perfect stereotypical Barbie kind of woman, you know. And she had, like children can be, you know, a little wild and very creative. And she had made this totally abstract kind of thing that was at the limit to a portrait, but not anymore. I saw this and I thought, this is a masterpiece. I love this. And she gave it to me, actually. And I ordered this children's game and I began to work with it. And I began to deconstruct and reconstruct and rip and re-put together. And that's how this collage work began. I mean, the collage also, I look at them through my cell phone. This is my camera today. If you have a distance, you see better the work. You need a distance, actually. I mean, for me.
Oh, and the screen of the cell phone, it creates the distance?
Yes, it creates a distance. It creates a physical distance and a psychological distance. And then when I'm ready, when I say, okay, this is fine, it works, it's finished, then I photograph it again with the cell phone and then I bring it into Photoshop. So it's an analog departure and then I work digitally on it again in the Photoshop for the colors. And sometimes I do even collages digitally also And then I printed from my computer. I have the printer here. And then I printed, I do a pigment print on this semi-transparent silk paper. And that's the result then.
So now you're completely independent. It's all do it yourself. You have everything in your studio.
Yes.
Mm. This is, I think, is one of the great things of the digital software and devices that are existing. It's like with this podcast, you can do everything yourself.
Yes, it's fantastic. This is so much for me because it makes you independent. You feel free. I mean, I'm dependent, of course. I do these big constructions today with the traveling chairs and I have collaborators, you know, and I work with them and it's wonderful. But it's also not really a dependency because I decide and you buy the material and then you put it together. I construct it here in my studio also. So it's really a wonderful freedom.
You gained some recognition. You just had like a kind of retrospective in the Museum der Moderne in Salzburg. And right now you have a solo show with your collage at the Galerie Xippas in Paris. How is that suddenly all these things you just started and all these diverse projects and now they're really leading also to big recognition and institutional recognition?
Well, it's very nice that I have the possibility to show, you know, and then people react to my work. And of course, it's a big joy if people like what they see. Actually, in Paris, I am in two spaces. In the upper space, I show the portraits, you know, the faces. I call them faces. These are collage works. And I put traveling chairs in the space. And in the basement, I have the rolling stools, which are stools that I also put on wheels. And I have these new panorama format works, which are landscapes. It's still portraits, but it's more a landscape kind of structure, format, and vision. But the portraits are still present. Why I say that is that I put into the space the traveling chairs. And I have this big joy also that people sit in these chairs and they move each other around in the space and they look at the work. That's a big joy. And of course, it's a big joy to have recognition. I had this award for artistic photography. And this led to the show at the museum in Salzburg, Museum der Moderne, which was also great because it was the first time it allowed me to bring also these different fields, groups of work together and to look back, to look into my archive that I didn't look at for many, many, many years from the 70s and 80s and to drag out new work that I had never shown and to look at it today in a different way, to scan it and to print it on cotton paper. And to make the connection between my photographic works and the collages and the traveling chairs and even the Magella work, I put everything together and my collaboration also with Franz West and a video I did for a musical group. So it was really nice to bring all this together, you know, and to try to eliminate borders in a certain sense.
Some of those informations I will put in the show notes of the podcast so people can look at it, what we are just talking about. Now, from here on, what's the next step for you? Do you know it or are you just letting it happen?
You mean creatively or exhibition-wise?
Yeah, creatively.
Well, creatively, I would like to work now a little bit, maybe more on my new format, the panorama work. Whenever I try to make total abstraction or landscape or still life-like of things with the collage works, I always experience it as a failure. And then I put these portraits in. There's not a kind of image of a living being somewhere. I have a difficulty to accept the work, but I want to continue to work on these formats. And what is my really future project I would like to work on now is a series of books I would like to make, which is a different format. I made this catalog with the Museum der Moderne, and I had a catalog with my show at the Consortium in Dijon. I have another little catalog of the Kunsthalle show a long time ago, but I also like to write very much. And I would like to make a series of books where I treat my different fields, you know, and bringing that together. I don't know how the thing will move from one book to the next and whether I mix the photography and the collages and the sculptures and the texts all together. The idea is to leave a series of books behind where I can play with all this and bring it in a way together, like maybe the first experiment of that was the show at the Museum der Moderne, but I think it can go much further. And I'm quite excited about working on that.
Marina, I hope you do it with a lot of joy. Thank you so much for that talk.
Thank you very much, Daniela.
Please find links and a text about my guest in the show notes. For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Visit our website van-horn.net and subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.